We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. It's the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always my co-host, Nick Filato. Yeah, I did it differently this time because I'm in a good mood today. Because it's almost time for training camp. I'm excited about football returning. It's my life. I love the sport. I'm insanely passionate about it, and I have been for quite some time. And so I'm excited to see the Giants this year. There's expectations from both of our ends that they're going to win 10 games. I think they're going to win 10 games, maybe 11. Maybe 12. Are they this year's Browns? They don't have the offensive line for it, but they have a better defense for it. Maybe they're this year's Browns. I don't know. But I'm excited. And then there's fantasy football, which is also freaking awesome. I can't wait. But other than that, man, how's your week been going? Obviously, we talked a little bit about your trip out to the West Coast. And I had a good week, man. I just got finished playing my pops, Ronald Schneier, in tennis. Unfortunately for Ron, he lost again. He hasn't been able to beat me for quite some time, but he hit well, he served well, but now I got the timing down. Been playing a little bit. We played each of the last 4 weeks, I believe. 6-1 today. We only had time for one set. We hit for a while, warmed up for a while, just wanted to hang around, talk, catch up, but it was a good time, man. I just love doing anything outdoors involving physical activity if there's a game and a sport involved. Like, do you ever see me running? No, I don't run, Nick. That's your job. It's your life. You find a way to make that enjoyable for you. And at times I am concerned that it's not actually enjoyable for you. I think it's just like, oh my God, I ate this piece of bread today. I have to go run now for 40 minutes. It's like I'm worried about that to some extent, but I will say this. I love being outside and actually playing a game. I played pickup basketball twice last weekend, Friday and Saturday. That was freaking awesome. So getting back out there, man, and it feels damn good. How are you doing today, my friend?
I want to play some pickup basketball, man. Mm. I grew up playing pickup basketball, love playing pickup basketball, haven't played in probably about 2 years. So that's something that needs to be fixed. I would love to play with you, Dan. I think that'd be a whole lot of fun, but I'm doing well. But I want to say something. At the 14-second mark here, you sounded like Duke Ellington from Big Mouth. You watch Big Mouth?
Oh, I love Big Mouth.
I walked past this star, by the way, on Sunset Boulevard. Nice. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to my group chat. And just all the gifts just came flying in there. Maury and Duke Ellington. If anybody hasn't watched Big Mouth, it's an adult animated show. So don't watch with your kids. It may look like a kid show, but I highly encourage it. It's very, very grotesque.
Yeah, it's unbelievably funny. Like the first season, I remember just laughing out loud so often. Like, it was just so many laugh out loud moments, just ridiculous things.
You're a big laugher too.
I am a big laugher. You're a big we've watched some shows together, and I am a big laugher when I watch shows. You are not.
No, I sit there and you wouldn't.
And sometimes I'm like debating, like, is it, like, first of all, as a big laugher with shows, I will laugh when something's funny. Let me start by saying that. And as a laugher with shows, a laugh, when you're laughing out loud at a show, it's always so much more enjoyable when another person you're watching with is laughing as well. When they don't laugh, you start to second guess yourself. Like, is this funny or am I just an idiot for thinking this is funny? But then over time, we've watched enough shows that I've realized that, like, you just don't laugh. Like, even if you think it's funny, you're like, in your head, you're like, probably like, that was clever. And then that's it. But, like, you don't actually laugh.
What's going on
but
in my
occasionally
head.
You do laugh. And it's such a reward. When you laugh and then I'm laughing, I'm like, it's such a reward. Because I'm like, that was funny. I knew that was funny, first of all.
It's a revelation.
I thought it was funny, but I wasn't positive, and I thought maybe I was an idiot. Now I know it's funny.
No, so. Yeah, I'm not a big laugher in shows, but I really enjoy it though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That show is just excellent. I can't wait till they come back for another season. I mean, it's Nick Kroll. It's forgetting his name. It's the guys who do you guys ever seen the How Did This Get Made podcast? Or listen to the How Did This Get Made podcast? Actually, I haven't listened in forever, but it's one of my favorite podcasts. It's Nick Kroll and his buddies, the same guys, like Paul Scheer and all the guys from The League, and then his wife, I forgot her name.
John Mulaney's in there, too.
Mulaney's in Big
Jordan
Mouth,
Peele's
yeah.
in it.
Yep, yep. There's a lot of star power in that show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so great show for sure. All right, let's do what we came to do here today, and that's talk a little bit about this Giants safety group. So before we break down any players, before we talk about the fact that Jabril Peppers has not been re-signed, I don't like it either, before any of that, I want you to do what you do every single time we do this series, Nick. You started off for us every time, and that's how I want it to be. Give me a 1 to 10 grade on the safety group relative to the rest of the NFL.
9.
Just a flat 9. Again, could just be a nine not point. Using the decimal system. It's just not
honestly,
the way to
go. I am comfortable saying 9.5.
Like, you know how much you limit yourself? First of all, every time you've used the decimal system, you always do a 0.5. Like, that's not just barely using the decimal system. You want to hit, like, point something. Like, you know, like, this is that you're limiting yourself. You're basically making it a one of, you have 10 options. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And if you add the 0.5, now you have 20 options. I, on the other hand, have 100 options to work with you.
I want to see your 100 options. What do you get?
100 options.
If you say 9, I will die laughing.
I'm not going to say 9. I'm not going to say 9. I'm going to say 8.6.
Really?
Yeah, 8.6.
I'm intrigued.
Again, McKinney remains unproven.
Okay.
I have a lot of upside for them. I think Logan Ryan is a bit overrated by Giants fans, I'm going to be honest. I did a thing two days ago, and I love Logan Ryan. I think he's a great player. He's a little older. I don't think he's as good as either of these other two. If you ask me right now, who would I rather have on this roster? Jabril Peppers or Logan Ryan? It's Jabril Peppers. Xavier McKinney or Logan Ryan? It's Xavier McKinney. Adoree Jackson or Logan Ryan? It's Adoree Jackson. James Bradbury, obviously. That goes without saying. Obviously, I'd still probably rather have Logan than Aaron Robinson.
What I would combat with that is the leadership that Logan Ryan does bring.
This is team leadership. You know how me and you. We've seen the Giants ever since we started watching film on this team and going over it. I feel like we've seen eye to eye on so many different things from a film based standpoint, and I hope that's not confirmation bias, which is, you know, if anyone study psychology's confirmation bias is like when you believe something and someone confirms it for you, it makes you feel even stronger about that belief. I don't think it's that. I think it's that we're just watching film, and I don't want to sound elitist here, but not everybody who's talking about the team is watching the film on this team. Let's just be honest about that. But I will say this. One thing we've never been able to see eye to eye on is the true impact of quote-unquote culture and quote-unquote leadership, which I believe in to an extent. I just think there's a huge scale. Let's say the scale was 1 to 100. I think you're on like the 99 of it, and I'm on like the 54 of it. Or you're on like the 83 of it, and I'm on like the 36 of it.
I just
feel like there's a 50-point gap in what we believe that actually means for wins and losses.
I think it's gigantic. Having a leader on the team that can convey what the coaches want to do and then put people into place to execute their assignments.
I believe that, but that's Blake Martinez's job.
That's for the linebackers. The safeties do so many things, Dan. They do so many different types of coverages, and then when the offense
but
changes...
But say he's not there.
Motion.
Can Jabril Peppers do it? Probably. I mean, can Xavier McKinney do it? Probably. He did it at Bama.
I mean...
He definitely did it at Bama.
I think you're underrating what Logan Ryan brings to the team from that standpoint.
I think that Xavier McKinney could bring it just as much.
Xavier McKinney is a guy with barely any snaps. Maybe Jabril Peppers, but still, Jabril Peppers also has his own assignments within what he has to do.
I believe he's the best leader on the roster. You're right. But if you could give me a great leader on the roster or somebody who can hang in man coverage all game like Marlon Humphrey or something, give me the talent. I'll take the talent every day.
Yeah, but
I'll take the talent.
Yeah, but nobody's saying that you can't have one without the other. You
no,
know?
I agree. Yeah. But I just feel like the whole, like, Judge brought in this amazing locker room culture. Okay, the Giants also didn't have much talent. They only won 6 games, 4 against quarterbacks who won't be playing in the NFL this
year. I definitely value culture more than you, but I'm not necessarily – I'm just speaking just with Logan Ryan. just with Logan Ryan.
Yeah.
I think what he brings to the roster is, and I'm not just saying that because he shouted me out and everything, and I love the fact that he did that. Like, I do believe what he brings to this roster is valuable, and it's not necessarily quantifiable.
That's
I think it's
fair.
A lot of behind the scenes. It's like somebody on a production crew in the movies, all the productions, people doing all the production stuff and not like the star actors. But I think that he's doing a lot of production stuff that we don't see. It doesn't show up on a stat sheet, but it is valuable.
And I think it is valuable. I think it's not quantifiable, like you said. And I think he's doing a lot of it and doing a great job of it. My whole thing is I think it's like a scale 1 to 100, I guess I would say. I'll reiterate this. And I would just, I'm on the scale of talent over culture. Always. I will always.
I'm not saying
these guys still have to play the game.
I'm not saying I'm not.
No, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I just. And he's talented as well. He's making big impact on the field. I mean, like, the play he made against Washington where he batted the ball out of the guy's hand. I forget. Was that Washington or was that another division opponent?
Oh,
we didn't win many games. We were almost all against the division.
It depends on which play you're talking about.
Where he stripped, forced the strip fumble and it was recovered by, I think it might have been Holmes. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think that one might have been
quick catch by Logan Thomas. He turned upfield and he ripped the ball out.
Yeah, that's Washington.
Then. Yeah, okay. I think it was Logan Thomas, though, but I don't even know if that was that.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. But I was thinking about the Nico Lelos play.
That's another great play. Yeah.
Yeah, he recovered that. Nico Lelos was the one who kind of like forced the receiver. I think it was the Drew Sample was the tight end.
So listen, man, he definitely – I believe in culture, but again, I would probably take the other two tight ends over him still, to be completely honest.
Safeties, yeah.
The two safeties, sorry. Yeah. I was just thinking about Logan Thomas. And in general, I'm just a little bit more skeptical of the impact of culture. I think, like, culture – my whole thing with culture is this. When you're winning, the culture's always great, you know? And the Giants did a great job last year of building a great culture despite not winning.
Because
they started the season, and after week 7, they weren't out of it mathematically because the division was the worst ever in the history of the NFL. But in any other season, they would have had another season where by week 8, they were completely eliminated from the playoffs. And he managed to keep that team fighting hard, playing every snap. All that is important. But I also think that if you have the talent on the field, you're winning games, and then it doesn't matter. Like, I don't think that Matt LaFleur, or what's not Matt LaFleur. Who's the Packers coach? Mike LaFleur?
No, it's Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur. I get all the LaFleurs mixed up. I don't think that Matt LaFleur has built some kind of great culture.
Peter LaFleur.
Like, yeah, Peter LaFleur. But, like, my example is, like, for Matt LaFleur, it's like, I can't see that guy really owning a locker room like Joe Judge does, getting people to fight hard for him. I feel like he's kind of a laissez-faire coach that like has like really good offensive game plans and like really sees the game really well schematically. And so like I don't think he built any kind of great culture, and yet the Packers have won like 13 and 14 games the past two seasons.
Yeah, that's what Aaron Rodgers though, like an established...
And everybody talks though about how good that culture is, right? Like it's known now as a great culture because they win games.
Even within the Packers, which I feel is like interesting, is like Aaron Rodgers is kind of known as a toxic type of leader.
So
too.
It's not even
But they're winning.
And they're still winning.
But they're winning.
Despite having Rodgers' toxic leader type, who's very selfish and a lot of
But again, all of these should be analyzed in a vacuum. They shouldn't be analyzed, you know, like as a collective thing, essentially.
True. And we got off to a huge tangent about culture. Let's get back to the safeties. 8-6, did I give it? Or did I say 8-7 or 8-6?
I think you said 9. No, said 8-6.
You said 9 flat, and then you changed it to a 9-5. Just making a mockery of the
maybe
decimal
an 8-5,
system.
I'm not sure. No. Again, we'll go with 9.
Limiting yourself so much on this decimal scale, but listen, this unit is an upside-based unit in my mind because Xavier McKinney still needs to be realized, but it's also a powerful unit in our eyes because of the depth. They have three really good safety types on this roster between Ryan, McKinney, who again is more of a projection by us, but we really believe there was that one rep that I showed that like I remember pinpointing to you, Nick, and you were like, oh yeah, that was good shit when it was against the Cowboys in the last game when he drove down on a ball and came within inches of intercepting a pass. And I hadn't seen a Giant safety make a play like that. I think since Kenny Phillips was on this roster, I hadn't seen a safety drive down from a deep half on basically a 15-yard in-breaking route and nearly make a drive-down interception where he perfectly reads the play and drives to a spot. And that was like, oh boy, this guy's doing this with no practice time, missed all of training camp, came off a foot injury where he couldn't really run, still has those kind of instincts. So I have really high expectations on McKinney. We'll get a little more to him later. But this is the overview for the position. We feel really good about it. So let's start with the number one at this position. Who would you say at this moment is the number one?
That's interesting. So, you know, I'm just going to go with Jabril Peppers. I mean, he has, you know, I don't even know how the Giants value him. I don't know if they're just being patient with the contract. And I'm not really going to speculate on that quite yet. He's going to have to really ball out, and we'll see if the Giants even have the money to give him. There's a lot of variables that kind of go into him. But I do think Jabril Peppers took a pretty large jump from his 2019 season to his 2020 season with Patrick Graham. And we saw him do so many different things. He played overhang, apex defender, whatever the heck you want to call
it. Back it up.
Overhang is the number one cornerback is outside, right, on the number one receiver. Overhang would be the guy on the inside. Apex defender is the... It's similar to overhang, but it's technically classified as the defender that would be a secondary piece but would be close to the end man on the line of scrimmage. So he can do all that. He can drop in the box and play, you know, money linebacker type role. Mm-hmm. He played deep half. We never saw him play center field too much. I don't think there were many snaps of him doing that. But he basically acted as that hybrid linebacker safety that is valuable in Patrick Graham's system. And he's not a liability in run support. He's a very sound tackler. He was very effective as a blitzer. I think his man coverage skill got better from 2019 to 2020, which he handled well against tight ends on those flag routes, those seven routes, on those seams, in those streaks. I think there was a play where he carried Gronk on a horizontal cross, and Gronk had a little bit of leverage on him, and he was just riding the outside hip of Gronk, waited, baited Brady's eyes while staying with Gronk, and then right when Brady threw the ball, he lunged himself because he has excellent lower body explosiveness and dove in front of Gronk with his inside hand and knocked the ball away while just trailing the hip. That's what Jerome Henderson teaches these guys a lot. The technique is you want to attack with that inside arm, and then you still have another arm if you miss with that inside arm, and you also kind of can control that receiver with this arm. That's why when we saw the one touchdown against Boston Scott that Jabril Peppers gave up in the first Eagles game, the one that they lost, he didn't handle that correctly, and right. Henderson criticized him because the way he played that ball was just not the correct technique. It's not what the coaches teach him. Jabril Peppers got criticized, and then he was able to correct that as the season progressed. So I think Jabril Peppers is a ton of upside there, 25-year-old elite athlete type of player, add special teams value, but more of a box type of safety if we're going to be kind of lazy with our analysis, more of somebody who you want maybe a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage than somebody you want dropping to center field.
And Henderson, for those who don't know, is the Giants corner coach, defensive backs coach, and really did a lot of great work. Not only Henderson, but Joe Judge. There was a lot of talk last offseason about the work they were doing. Remember, they taped the tennis balls to their hands so they wouldn't get grabby. The way they teach coverage is very similar to how the Patriots taught coverage there. And again, it's a very similar system overall that Patrick Graham runs, but more importantly, specifically to this defensive backs group, it's a style of teaching how to cover, and it works. Like, the Patriots have done an excellent job with it. The Giants look so much better in coverage one year to the next. I mean, the Giants in 2019 in coverage versus the Giants in 2020 on coverage in film, it's night and day. It's like, how could this team possibly have gotten that much better in coverage just adding one Bradberry to the mix? And overall, they did. Jabril Peppers is the best example of this to me. Out of anyone on the entire roster, Nick, I think Peppers made the biggest jump when it comes to just purely breaking down pass coverage. I think it was the biggest jump he made overall in his game, pass coverage. And again, he's shown in the past he can cover tight ends at times, but really it's just it's the overall coverage. And I think a lot of it was technique-based. I'm really excited about how the Giants teach coverage.
And you wanna look at the technique too, because if you watch the games, you can see it. It's kind of subtle with what the technique does that does not get flagged, and it probably should, because right. It impedes the wide receiver's advance. Now, not necessarily technique overall, but you see this a lot on the horizontal crossing route. Now, I saw James Bradberry do this against DK Metcalf. You see it a lot, and it's when you're on that horizontal cross. So from one side of the field, they're running across, you know, maybe at depth 12 to 15 yards, and you're basically riding that outside hip, and you keep your outside arm, so the arm that is upfield, not towards the quarterback, on that hip. And then right when the throw happens, you subtly just tug the hip. You're not tugging the upper body. You're not grabbing any laundry. So it's very hard to see, but you just tug the hip very subtly and then kind of use that like, I guess you could say, energy to leap in front of the pass and knock it away with momentum. Your other hand, that momentum, and you knock the ball with your inside arm, but that little tug stops their momentum, gives you just a little bit of momentum, just a little bit more momentum, and allows you to kind of jump in front of them. It doesn't really get flagged that often unless you're really egregious with it, or if they sell like that, you know, and they throw their arms.
The Mike Evans, the Mike, we call it.
He does that all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's excellent stuff, Nick. Hopefully it's not something where teams will catch on to this and bait the refs into calling this and things of that nature. But the proof is in the pudding, man. I got to give a shout out to Will Spainman 1991 on Twitter. He said, remember the tennis... He broke down these numbers. Remember the tennis balls taped to the defensive back's hands that the media made fun of last year? Well, the Giants were tied for the third best in the NFL last year in 2020 for defensive holding and defensive pass interference calls. They only had 11 combined. 6 defensive holdings called, 5 defensive pass interference called. In 2019, the Giants had the 28th worst. They went from 28th worst to 3rd best. They had 14 holdings and 11 defensive pass interference for a combined 25, more than double what they had last season. So proof is in the pudding, my man, of how much, and here's another weird saying, proof is in the pudding. What do you think that one comes from?
Proof is in the pudding. I'm not sure. Pudding is something that people want, right? It's a desire.
Have you ever had pudding in your life?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I was younger, I would have
pudding. When's the last time you had pudding?
I have no idea.
I mean, I haven't had it in a while either, but would you eat pudding right now? The answer is no.
Probably not, no.
You wouldn't treat yourself to one pudding?
I mean...
No, you wouldn't.
Is it my birthday?
The whole is it my birthday thing. You have like, it's your birthday, you cheat yourself one day, but like, I feel like even when you do that, it's like, I won't have pizza though. I still can't do a few things. Like, you know?
I'm gonna alter my lifestyle. I'm gonna
do alter, it. I'm gonna alter my life. Fat Nick would be so fun, man. Fat Nick. I would love Fat Nick.
Jeez, I would not.
You would not, but I would love Fat Nick. General, I think Fat Nick could be, I don't know. Could it be maybe? I don't know.
I'm somebody who I like to run, though. I like to stay active.
It's not
going to
happen.
I
only joke about it because I know it's not going to happen. But my whole point was that we talked a lot last podcast when we broke down the cornerbacks about what Patrick Graham made for them, what he meant for them, what coaching can do, why Jason Garrett held the Giants back. Well, this is another example of what individual coaching can do. And Judge was played a big part in this as well. But so did Henderson. So did all of these, specifically the defensive backs coach, of course. But teaching them this style of coverage made such a difference. Will broke it down, man. 11 combined defensive holdings and pass interference versus 25. That's just crazy stuff. The night and day type improvement is part of the reason the Giants' defense made such a drastic change last year.
And some of those defensive holdings too. Some of them can be a little ticky tacky, but I think that happens every year.
Sure.
To be honest, there's just a couple that I remember going through because, like I said earlier, I went through a lot of James Bradbury film recently, and I was like, you see that happen all time in the NFL and it gets flagged. But Bradbury, like, I don't know, like, you know, in the NBA, like, you know, LeBron gets the calls, this guy gets it, like, that happens in football somewhat too, I think, but I don't know if Bradbury has that respect yet to command that.
Yeah, I don't think he has that respect just yet, but I just agree with you, like, the you know, the stars get calls in general, more so in the NBA though.
More so in the NBA, I would say.
Yeah,
too.
And yeah. Soccer with all the flopping.
Oh, yeah, but Mike, like, you brought up Mike Evans before. I mean, Mike Evans, literally watch him run routes, he pushes off almost every time there's a cut. Every single time. Yeah. Doesn't get called enough.
That's amazing. All right, let's get to the number 2 safety in your mind on this roster. Who is their second best safety heading into training camp? But before we do that, let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Alrighty, Dan. Logan Ryan is who I'm going to go over right now, just because he's the veteran and the leader of the secondary is what I would say. So I think kind of like we kind of went over him a lot before, what I feel like he brings to this team. And I also think he is, you know, a good player in run support, and he doesn't really have many liabilities. What I critiqued him on the good, great, and ugly thing that I wrote for Patricia Traina for Giants Country, was that he got a little aggressive at times, and that baited him into giving up some touchdowns. There was one touchdown that was given up against Baltimore where it was to Dez Bryant, where he kind of took the crosser instead of staying in his spot. He should have passed that crosser off, and he didn't, and then that resulted in a touchdown. There was another on the double move from Sims from the Washington football team where he kind of took a steeper angle than he probably should have, and that allowed the double move to kind of manifest itself.
That little in-breaking route. Yeah.
It was out and up. And,
yeah,
no,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
And the seam route kind of dragged James Bradbury inside, and it allowed for that. It was an excellent, like, Scott Turner is an excellent play caller, and this is
so we
brought him up on. We didn't bring his name up, but we brought up how Darnay Holmes was attacked in the Washington football game. I mean, That's Scott Turner doing that. He knows what he's doing.
I wish the Giants had Scott Turner as their offensive coordinator, man. I really do.
Yeah, so I brought up those little plays, but overall, like, I really think he brings an invaluable thing to this team from everything that we went over before with Logan Ryan, and I do believe he's not a liability run support, all that stuff, and he's also physical at the catch point. All that puts himself in the position that he needs to be, puts his teammates in the position that they need to be. That's one of the big reasons why we don't see the huge coverage breakdowns like we saw in 2019. James Betcher's defense.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I wasn't poo-pooing Ryan as much as, you know, just a culture take. It was just a fun little debate earlier. But I'll say this, what I love most about Ryan is he can play multiple spots for them. Like you said, he makes a lot of plays in the run game. He's extremely aware. He's like Bradbury in the sense that his awareness would be in the high 90s or maybe high 80s if it was graded on a 1 to 100 scale. He seems to always be in the right spot at the right times to make those trip fumbles and to make big plays on the ball. I thought he did an excellent job of that last year, and a lot of that is what you said. He's super smart. He is an extension of Patrick Graham, at least in the secondary. I think Blake Martinez ultimately has more of a responsibility on calling the defense and getting everything in place, but Ryan's probably the number two there, and he's definitely in charge of the secondary. And there's no ifs, ands, and buts. There's no way around it. This secondary had a crap ton of mental coverage breakdowns in 2019, just as many almost in 2018. 2020, seemingly none. So some of that is obviously the coaching. Some of that is the extension of the coach, Logan Ryan. And that could be, like you said, invaluable. I'm definitely more on the side of like the coach on the field being super valuable, as like the locker room guards and that stuff, locker room type stuff. It's like, I've been in locker rooms, I've interviewed these players. Winning is what makes people happy. Winning is what builds good locker rooms. So a little less on that, but extension of a coach on the field, that's good stuff. And that's what Ryan definitely provided last year for them.
I think I understand where you're coming from the winning standpoint, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I do believe tough locker rooms are more resilient, and it can kind of get you through tougher patches of the season, which we've seen from the New York Giants in 07 and 2011 too.
And we've seen it go the opposite way in 2018 when it all collapsed with the Janoris Jenkins types in your locker room.
Yeah, so.
And even 2017 to some extent when Eli got benched and that kind of threw the locker room into a weird time. Yeah, because at that point when Eli got benched, half the team didn't agree with the decision.
Probably more than half the team.
Yeah, so that it definitely plays a role for sure. All right, let's get into our third corner, our third safety, number three on the list. He'd probably be, by the end of the year, I think he's going to be the second best safety on this roster.
He might be
potentially the first. I actually think he's got a good chance to be the first best safety on this roster. And that's Xavier McKinney, the second-year pro who missed the vast majority. I mean, he played 211 snaps last year. That's it. But man, 74 in that Dallas game, his first full slate complement of snaps, and he was fantastic in that Dallas game. I love what I saw on film there. And if that's a sign of what is to come, I am so excited. So talk a little bit about McKinney.
McKinney, another player who's very, very versatile, and that's something that I love to see because he handled so many assignments in Nick Saban's defense at the Crimson Tide when he was in college, and he's somebody who I feel like does have the capability to drop in the single high, middle of the field, close, look, cover one type stuff, and you need a lot of range to be able to do that. You need the ability to click and close downhill, which he definitely has. You need the ability to understand how to master angles and not, you know, take a poor angle and run support, or even, you know, when you're breaking on a pass, because that could be the difference between, you know, a 12-yard gain and an 80-yard touchdown. And I think he has all that from a mental standpoint, and the athletic ability is there. I know his combine wasn't all that great, but when you watch his film, you could see his hips, you could see how he moves, you could see his feet, and you could see how he breaks on the football. And you brought up the play before, but there was another play in Dallas where he was just backpedaling and he was reading the route combinations. He saw Andy Dalton target the out route, and I think Darnay Holmes actually holds CeeDee Lamb, but Darnay Holmes didn't need to do that
because
McKinney broke and the throw was a little bit outside. And I don't think CeeDee Lamb was going to get there because the timing seemed to be off between Lamb and Dalton. I don't think it was the hole was very, very subtle. So maybe it was, but I really don't. McKinney broke on the pass so quickly, put himself in position, intercepted the ball, ran it up the sidelines, but then it ended up getting called back. He ended up getting another interception later to seal the win. But that was a huge play by Xavier McKinney that showed a lot of intriguing athletic traits and mental traits. And he has all those things.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, there were three plays in that Dallas game that could have been interceptions. One that was called back by a hold, the other where he just missed breaking on it, and then his actual interception. Guy had three potential interceptions in his only game he played last season where he had a full complement of snaps. He was drafted as a cookie-cutter perfect fit for Patrick Graham's system. He was the quarterback of the defense in Nick Saban's system. I remember reading Nick Saban talk about how he had more confidence and gave him more responsibility than anyone he's had in the last decade in that secondary. And that secondary has had first-round picks galore at Bama. He is a super heady player. His instincts, they're natural on the field. That's why he's making breaks on the ball. That's why he's coming up with potential three interceptions in one game. He can do a ton of things. He's a jack of all trades. That's another reason I'm super excited about him. In his last season at Alabama, he played a third of his snaps in the box, a third of his snaps lined over the slot, and then a third of his snaps in the deep half safety role. Why does the last part excite me the most? Well, the Giants have been in need for a center field deep half safety type forever so they can run more man coverage, forever so they can run more diverse pressure packages, and so they can shoot more gaps to help the run defense. If he can hold up in the deep half, something I don't really feel like Logan Ryan or Jabril Peppers can do an elite job of, maybe they can do an okay job of, if he can do a good to elite job of that, well, now you have so many more things schematically you can do if you're Patrick Graham and you're running this defense. McKinney, man, he is a great prospect for this team. It still has to be seen. He still only had one game last season with a full complement of snaps. But if that game told us anything, man, it's the Giants have a lot of confidence in him because he did not have much reps in training camp, didn't have a chance to really work out coming off the foot injury, and yet they put him in a full-time role in what was a must-win game. Like, yes, it was to get to 6 wins. And remember, again, 4 of them came against quarterbacks who will not be starting in the NFL this season. The Giants only had 2 wins against quarterbacks who will be starting in the NFL this season last year. 2 of 16. I want to keep that in mind because, to me, I don't like how last season was misremembered a bit. But that's a whole side tangent. But the point is, they put him in a big game in a big spot, and he came up big.
Yeah, not just the deep half, also center field role, which I think is what you meant. Yeah, the center field role. But his eye discipline for a player who was a rookie last year who missed all of training camp, who missed all the time rehabbing. It's not like his body was fully up to speed. No. That's why he had to play shorter snaps in that Cincinnati game coming out of the bye and everything like that. But his eye discipline, man, everything clicks for him. He sees everything breaking down in front of him. He knows how to bait and he knows how to react, and he has the athletic ability to put himself in the position. So I think the upside is so high for Xavier McKinney. I'm really, really excited about him.
Me too, man. Me too. All right, let's talk about the other safeties on this roster. We're going to incorporate a lot of players who are kind of safeties. They're hybrid-type defensive backs. So let's talk Julian Love.
Dan, I feel like I'm a little higher on Love than you are. And I don't think he's like an exceptional player or anything like that. But I value the amount of hats he can wear to a solid degree on this defense. And I think he can play that deep center field role when asked to. Might not be totally ideal, but I think when you consider somebody who was a boundary cornerback who had a ton of PBUs at Notre Dame, came into the league, had to learn a second defense in 2 years, and then played boundary cornerback, played slot, and did a bunch of different things, lined up in the box sometimes, is a sound tackler, is a better athlete than I feel like he gets credit for as well. I mean, I value that as a fourth safety. I really do.
I don't think that you're wrong in any of that. And my take on Love is not that I don't value him. My take is that I'm not so sure this coaching staff values him in that same regard, because he wasn't drafted by this coaching staff. And that always matters to me. He wasn't handpicked. He was handpicked for a totally different style of defense and a totally different coach. And then last year, he played a slew of roles. He never really got too many games with a full complement of snaps. I think he had 2 games where he had a full complement of snaps, 2 or 3 games. At the beginning of the season, he was playing a bunch. Then he kind of, in the middle of the season, started to fall up and not play at all. In Dallas, he played a bunch, obviously, because the corner situation was dire at that second boundary spot, and so he played it and helped them towards the end of the season. That's where, ultimately, I'm most excited of him about. I don't think he's a great slot guy. I definitely don't like him when he's playing the deep half. I don't like him in the safety role at all, really, to be honest with you. I don't think he's bad at it. I just think it's not optimal. But in that second corner role, especially if they're going to play a lot of zone, that's where I like him. That's where I think he's a solid player. And ultimately, he does wear a lot of hats, so he could definitely be the type of player that supersedes the fact that he wasn't drafted by this coaching staff.
I think he could too. And he's somebody that if he has to start, if he has to play, I don't think it's a huge indictment on this defense or liability, no. Maybe I should say, on this defense, like an Isaac Yiadom kind of would be, you know, would really make you scheme specific. Whereas I think Love can kind of come in and do a variety of different things. And as a fourth safety, I do think that's valuable. And I think that kind of, I think Julian Love might be better than a lot of other teams' fourth safeties. But I wouldn't to break down a lot of those other rosters, right, which I haven't done.
No. And neither of us have a full grasp of the fourth safety on all 32 teams. That would be pretty impressive on our part. All right, who are the other safeties you want to touch on here before we get to some bold predictions?
So you have Montre Hardage and Madre Harper. You also have Chris Milton, who's a little bit more of a cornerback. Madre Harper, somebody I feel like this coaching staff liked because of his size and his aggressiveness. I do remember last year him taking a penalty where I was like, oh no, I think it was on special teams and it was a little frustrating. But I think if he can make the roster, which is a big if with all these additions, if he can, he may find himself on the field if injuries do happen, because he is one of those cornerback safety hybrids that this coaching staff does seem to value, mainly because of the size and physicality that he brings.
Sure, I think that's fair. And I think Hartridge is a guy who comes from Miami, so he obviously has familiarity with Patrick Graham, and
also,
that helps.
Also really smart kid. He went to Northwestern, and yes, having that familiarity was big, but I just think he's a little bit athletically limited.
Yeah, I was going to say, limited athletically is not totally ideal, and usually can lead to probably early bowouts from your NFL career, at least with the Giants. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough competition for all of these defensive backs. There's a lot of talent at the defensive back position. All right, let's get to some bold predictions here. I tipped mine off a little bit earlier, but I'm going to say it now. By the end of the 2021 season, unanimously, I won't say unanimously because there's still a portion of the fan base who likes the Saquon Barkley pick. There's still a portion of the fan base who thought the Giants were amazing last year for some odd reason. So I'm not going to say it's unanimous, but I'm going to say me and you will unanimously agree that Xavier McKinney is the best safety on this roster. That's my bold prediction.
I think that's fair. My bold prediction is, and I don't know how bold, I'm going to say this is bold because it hasn't happened. One of these three are going to make the Pro Bowl.
Ooh. One of these three makes. I hate the Pro Bowl though.
Like, so do I.
Can we talk All okay. Pro?
See, All Pro is big. I think one of these three will rise to the upper. Probably not Logan Ryan. So I'm gonna say Jabril Peppers or Xavier McKinney are gonna rise to the upper echelon of safety play in the national view, and not just within the New York market.
I like that. That's a bold prediction, and I like it. All right, that's all we have for today. Before we sign off, I want to read a few more reviews and ratings. As always, if you leave us a rating and review on iTunes, you can ask us any question and we'll answer it. It doesn't matter. It could be about Nick's atrocious eating habits. And I call them atrocious, though a doctor would probably say they're ideal. And my eating habits are absolutely atrocious. So who knows? I mean, I literally, last time I went food shopping, bought a bag of saltwater taffy that's freaking fantastic. And I eat like two or three a day. I brought mango sorbet, I think it is, or shirt. This Trader Joe's mango sorbet is out of this world good.
You were almost going to pronounce that incorrectly, but you corrected yourself.
Well, it's a sherbet at first, but I was thinking the sherbet, but I think it is a sorbet. And my God, like I've opened that thing three times, and I'm already at least 75-80% through. And if you look at the back on like on the sample size or whatever they call it, the serving size, that thing has like 43 grams of sugar in every third. So I'm just funneling sugar into my body. Like any doctor would say this is a bad idea, but you know what? You only live once, as I guess Drake says. But
yeah, I think that was the great philosopher Drake.
The great philosopher Drake. So listen, you want to ask us about food. You want us to ask us about the Giants. You want us to answer any of your questions. Leave a review. Leave a rating. Do your part to help us grow this podcast. Shout out A. Heimowitz. 5-star review. These guys bleed blue. Mm-hmm. I have listened to these podcasts for some time now, and I have never heard such knowledge before about the G-Man. I was really impressed. Paul H. Juckin' Fames says, great podcast. These guys really break things down and deliver thoughtful analysis on all things related to the Giants. Thank you, Juckin' Fames. Rich G12 says, highly recommend this podcast. It's awesome. I love listening to these guys. 5-star review. Thank you. And finally, WTF, this is garbage, which I thought was going to be a negative review, though I then saw the 5-star said, I listen to every show while I'm working. It's a great show to listen to if you're a fan of the Giants or just like in-depth football analysis. I love hearing Dan get some airtime on FFT also. He's doing a great job. Keep up the good work, boys. Don't have any questions, but I did meet Lawrence Taylor once in White Plains, and he reeked of a freshly smoked cigar. Was not disappointed. LT is the GOAT. And we'll wrap it up there with that excellent review. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.